As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Before we commence today's sermon, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of how extremely fortunate we are to be students of the great master, to be his disciples, to have found his refuge, to be in his mercy, to have a path to our deliverance, to free ourselves from suffering once and for all. Let us remind ourselves that we are today gifted with this opportunity, as we are students of the Blessed One. This is our blessing. To reflect on this, let us take a moment to be upstanding and recite the stanzas that were once uttered by Upali the householder, when he reflected on the very same thing, on how blessed he felt he was to be a son, to be a disciple, to be a student of the Blessed One. So let us be upstanding now then to recite these stanzas, followed by which we will seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe the precepts, and continue with today's proceedings. Dhirasya vigata mohasya pabhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya buddha silasya sadhu panyasya Vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi akatankatissa tusitasya vansalokamisasya muditasya kasa samanasya manujasya Antima sarirasa narasa Anopamasa virajasa Bhagavato tasa Savako hamasmi Asansayasa kulasa Venaikasa sarati varasa Anut Uttarasya ruchira dhammasya nikhankasya abhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavato tasya savako hamasmi nisabhasya apameyasya Gambhirasya monapattasya Khemankarasya vedasya Dhammattasya sangutattasya Sangatigasya muttasya Bhagavatothasya savakohamasmi Nagasya pantasenasya Khina sanyojanasya muttasya Patimantakasya dhonasya Pannadhajasya vitaragasya Dantasya nippapanchasya Bhagavato tasya Savako hamasmi Isi sattamasa akuhasa Tevijjasa brahmapattasa Nahatakasa padakasa Pasadhasa viditavedasa Purindadasa sakkasa Bhagavato tasya savako ahamasmi. Isi sattamasa akuhasa devijyasa brahmapattasa nahatakasa padakasa pasadhasa viditavedasa purindadasa sakkasa bhagavato tassa Savako hamasmi. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Let us now take a moment to seek refuge in the noble Triduja Gem and observe the precepts. And in order to do so, please repeat them all together and after me.
Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Surameraya majjapama dattana veramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. Tisaranena saddhim pancha silang dhammam sadukham surakhitam katva apamadena sampadeta.
Okay, you may all now be seated. Also, before we begin, let us all take a moment to invite the many countless beings in the many countless world systems out there. As among them will be those who have been parents to us, spouses, siblings, our own children, friends, teachers, and so on. Those who would have come into our lives to help us and support and guide us, to be with us in the most difficult and testing of times, to save us from despair and help us out of the most challenging of situations. Today, we are able to enjoy the Dhamma, an opportunity that has arisen for us to escape from the shackles of samsara. However, those who were among us back then may today not have had that opportunity. They may today still be in despair, destitute in samsara, looking for an opening, looking for an opportunity, looking for an escape. Reminding ourselves that at one point they were there for us. It is only right that we remain grateful to them and extend to them this opportunity by passing on the gift that is the greatest of all gifts, the gift of Dhamma. Let us invite them to join us and to witness this meritorious deed, as among them may be some who are lacking in merits, and as a result of which they are today unable to escape from the woeful places. As they join us and witness this meritorious deed, they shall acquire merits, and thus those merits will help them to free themselves from the woeful planes, and may they be able to do so. Among them will also be those who are in the blissful plane, however destitute nonetheless in samsara, as they have not yet received the teaching of the Buddhas. So let us invite them to listen to this merit, listen to this sermon, understand it and comprehend it, and to realize the Four Noble Truths, and to free themselves from samsara. As I now make this invitation now to all of them, all sentient beings in the 10,000 world systems within earshot of this sermon, I invite you to extend that invitation in your hearts and in your minds out to all of them, with compassion emanating from the bottom of your hearts. Invite them to join us, to witness this meritorious deed, to listen to this sermon, and to free themselves once and for all from this endless suffering of samsara. Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajas sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Also, before we begin, let us take a moment to remind ourselves that although today we may be kind-hearted, generous, beings who are very respectful towards our teachers, the Noble Triple Gem, and so on, we have not always been like this. In fact, quite the opposite has been the truth. Having fallen into the association of ignoble, immoral beings, on countless occasions we have failed to recognize and to realize the value of the Four Noble Truths, of the Noble Triple Gem, and so on. Having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, with desire, aversion and delusion, on countless occasions we would have insulted, offended, reviled, desecrated the Noble Ones. And today the consequences of that have come to bite us, as we make efforts to free ourselves from samsara, the very things that we once desecrated are the very things that today we seek the association of. So, before we begin today's sermon then, let us take a moment to seek forgiveness for any misdeeds, for any wrong words or wrong thoughts that we would have once had towards them. Towards the Sammasambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahata Buddhas, Anagamis, Sakrudagamis, Sotapannas, be they on the path of having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddhasasana. For any thoughts, words or actions of revile, insult, desecration, slander or offense, may we be forgiven once and for all. And as you take a moment to seek that forgiveness, let me urge you to make a solemn promise to yourself to never conduct yourself in that manner ever again. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve. May by the power of all the merits that we would have conducted right from the beginning of samsara all the way up until now, may by the blessings and the power of those merits, we be able to realize the Four Noble Truths here, now, today, and achieve the noble state of sotapanna and embark on our journey to free ourselves from suffering once and for all. And for any among you who may already have achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages, and may we all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that resolve in mind, I invite you now to prepare yourselves to listen to this sermon. Okay. So today, I want to pick up from where we left off a fortnight ago. We discussed the workings of the mind, and we were trying to make sense of how the mind creates a delusionary world that we have come to call the sensual world, right before our mental eyes. We discussed the possibility that this is possibly an ailment to which we may require a remedy. But I appreciate that was a couple of weeks ago, so let me help refresh your memory. I did urge you to go back and listen to that sermon a couple of times over, and hopefully you have had the chance to do that. So for those of you who have done that, this reminder, this refresher, will be quite welcome. For those who might not have had the time to do that, you don't need to worry. We'll go back and revisit some of those topics before we make further steps forward. We started talking about the concept of time. It's a phenomenon that we have learned to live with. We have learned so much about time today that people in our society, some of them claim to be masters of time management. They claim to have mastered time. Time management is taught in schools, universities, seminars, lecture halls, talks given on stages and various other symposiums all around the world. And there are self-proclaimed masters of time management today. You can sometimes find a dime a dozen of these self-confessed time management masters. But is that true? Do we have the right to say that we have mastered time management? In other words, do we have the right to claim that we manage time? When you are the manager of something or someone, with that title, you are afforded certain privileges. You have some authority over the people that you manage, or the object, or the place, or whatever that thing that is that you manage. So a manager can normally make changes in the entity that they manage. Right? That is why you call them a manager. You can have more of it or less of it. So for instance, if you were, let's take a human resource manager, you could employ more of them. Or you can send off and have fewer of them, fewer staff or more staff. If say for instance you manage some other quantity of something, let's say you manage a fleet of cars for instance, you could have more of it, you could have less of it, you could determine, you could decide when and where they are to be, how much of it, and so on. So there are various factors that you can influence. That is when you are called a manager, right? There are various aspects of that which you manage, which you should be able to control. And that is when you can be entitled to call yourself a manager. How much of time can you really manage? All of it, some of it, little of it? What degree of control do you have over time? What is your authority over time? Can you have more of it if you wanted? Could you have less of it if you thought you had too much? Can you maybe share that among your team and spread it out? Say if you, for instance, had a lot of it, could you maybe pass on some of that as inheritance to your children? A real estate manager can make such decisions on the real estate that they manage. A property manager can make such decisions on the properties that they manage. An investment manager can make decisions on their investments. How much, to whom, what amount, when, which quantities, and so on. But these people that call themselves time managers, I have a question. How much of time can you really manage? Some of it? Put your hand up if you can manage some of your time. Put your hand up if you can manage all of your time, or just a little bit of your time. Just one tiny bit of your time, 1 second of your time, can you manage? I think we know the answer. So this time management concept is really a fallacy. It is something that we talk about. I myself may have mentioned it in sermons and have asked you to manage your time. But today I speak to you in a different tone. This is a different context. From a different perspective, today I ask you the question, the very thing that I asked you to do on one occasion, today I ask, are you actually able to do? Can you manage your time? Is it yours to manage? So really, can you manage your time? What part of that sentence makes any sense? What part of that question makes any sense whatsoever? Can you manage your time? Are you a good time manager? Well, there you see. We have started off on the wrong foot. To think that we can manage our time is a delusion. Really, no part of time do we manage at all. What really happens? What is it that really happens? We should flip sides really, shouldn't we? Who manages whom? The truth of the matter is, time manages you. See, time can have more of you, or time can have less of you. If time decides to keep you around for a bit longer, time can do that. Excuse me. If time decides, you know, it's enough of you, we've had enough of you, move on to the next one, then time can decide to do that. Time can cut you short. Time can extend you. Time can have more of you, less of you. So who's really the manager? Who's the slave? Who's the servant? So why do we allow ourselves to have this false notion that we are the managers of our time? Time is not ours to manage, and even if it were, we wouldn't be able to manage it. Not one millisecond of it. In fact, the opposite is the truth. Time manages us. Let's accept that, first and foremost. Sometimes victory is in accepting defeat. Sometimes to win, all you have to do is give up. To have everything you want, sometimes all you need to do is let go of everything you are holding on to. Seems ironical. Doesn't sound right. But hey, so does most things. When you take a closer look at most things in life, they just don't look right. They just don't sound right. That's why no one seems to have figured this out yet. Certainly not until they get to learn the truth. That you can have everything you want if only you give up everything you own. To have everything, you have to own nothing. These concepts sound very absurd. I'll give you that. And to a first timer, this may sound like madness, as it did even back in the time of the Buddha, when he came along and said, to have everything you want, just give whatever it is you want and you will have everything you want. There were people back then who challenged this concept. That makes no sense at all, they said. How could you give and have everything you want? If you want to have something, you've got to collect it, you've got to gather it, you've got to hoard it, not give it away. This is why we must always look at things from a fresh perspective. We must always be willing to challenge our thinking patterns and broaden our horizons. If we lock ourselves up in the same ways of our own old thinking habits, we can never move on. We can never move on to greener pastures and achieve greater things and become more than we are today. It is our thinking habits that keep us where we are today, keep us stuck in our old ways. That is why in the presence of great people, great minds, we must allow them to influence us. We must allow them to talk to our minds and talk to our hearts. Not manipulate us, but influence us. There's nothing wrong with influencing. But if one is so adamant and considers that it's only they who know, and no one knows better than they do, if one thinks that I know it all, I will not be challenged, I'm not willing to listen to anyone else, then they'll forever be wherever they are, stuck in their old ways, never able to find a deeper meaning. We lock ourselves up in the prisons that we create for ourselves. That is the truth. We alone have the keys to those prison cells, because we built them, we designed them, we engineered them. We alone have the keys to our own prisons. So then you ought to wonder why some people remain incarcerated. They keep themselves locked in. Why? Because they're not willing to consider these words. They're not willing to think outside of the box. They're not willing to listen to someone else's ideas. Because what I know is right, and forever that shall be the case. But we are not like that. Are you willing to be a different person tomorrow than you were yesterday? Are you? If I were to show you that everything you're doing is wrong, are you willing to let go of everything? Are you willing to change? Are you willing to start from scratch? Are you willing to go back to the drawing board? This is easier said than done. If I were to prove to you that everything you've done over the last 50, 60, 70 years of your life have been nothing but a waste of time, and really you've got to start again, are you willing to even listen to these words? This is one of the prerequisites for one to become a student of any type of philosophy, let alone Buddhist philosophy. Because what the Buddha taught, no one knew before his arrival. His way of thinking was a different one. His approach to life was very different. What he taught, his doctrine, his philosophy, you will never find in any other book from any other teacher. Very different. So only courageous men, women and children who are willing to start again, who are willing to set aside their baggage that they have built up, acquired, gathered over the best part of their lives, willing to set all that aside and start fresh, start anew, will truly be able to achieve something out of this. That is why you must forever remain a good student. In every walk in life, folks, in every aspect of your life, always be prepared to start new. Always remain a child. Always allow yourself a new chance, a new opportunity, a new beginning, a new way, a new method. Don't ever lock yourself up simply because it was done the same way for the last 60 years doesn't mean it has to be done like that tomorrow as well. You can change. That is one of the gifts we have as human beings. We can change any time. At the drop of a hat, you can change. At the bat of an eyelid, you can change. That is the power of the mind. You can change anytime you want. True, to take you to a different destination will require time, but to change the set of the sail, that you can do anytime. Be willing to change. Because the ability to change is perhaps the greatest gift of mankind. The ability to change. If we forego that, then are we any different to beasts? Because guess what? They are not willing to change. So what sets us apart is what we must embrace, is something that we must hold dear to ourselves and make use of. Because particularly on this journey, we need to be able to change, and our ability to change is what will get us where we need to go, where we need to be. So are you willing to change? That is the best part of being human. Are you willing to make use of that? It may be that you have earned a lot of money, a lot of wealth over time. Perhaps it may be that one day you begin to realize that not all the money I have earned in all the years I have been alive is getting me where I want to be. But it may be that you spent and toiled all of your life earning every cent, every penny, every dollar. Are you willing to put that all aside? Are you willing to start fresh? You know, these are examples we need to take from the lives of our heroes. Look at the Buddha. He started fresh. Not once, not twice, how many times over? Remember, he was a prince born into a very rich family, a royal prince, one of the richest at the time, one of the wealthiest kingdoms, one of the most powerful kingdoms. And then one day came, he thought to himself, none of this is what I want. He decided, I shall renunciate. He gave up everything. Everything. And he went forth. From that day forward, he visited many a teacher. From teacher to teacher he went. Don't you think every day was a day of change in the life of the Bodhisattva? What was he not willing to sacrifice? Is there anything Did he ever draw a line and say, you know what, beyond this line, I'm not going to make sacrifices. Inside of this, I'm okay. This is my comfort zone. But I can't go beyond this line. That's just not possible. If it needs me to go beyond this line, nah, can't be bothered. Was he ever like that? I imagine day to day, week by week, he went to a different teacher trying to find the truth. But no one that he came across was able to give him what he wanted. So he learnt everything from every teacher he went to. And then when he realized, no, this is not what I came for. He didn't at that point think to himself, but then all these things I've worked hard learning. All these rituals I've spent time practicing and perfecting. What is the point? I can't all of a sudden just drop all of this and start again. He never thought like that. He was willing to sacrifice anything. And so he did. Eventually he got to the five ascetics. And there he spent a total of 6 years practicing extreme austerity like no man has ever done before. A stark contrast to his life as a prince, don't you think? See how much he was willing to change? There was not a single cell in his body, not a single thought in his mind that said, nope, not willing to change. I tell you, you couldn't find a single cell in his body that said, nope, not willing to change. There was nothing about him that was not willing to change. He was always willing to change. These are the makings of the great men, great women, great people. I'm asking you, are you like that? When shown the truth, when the truth is presented to you and laid out bare, are you willing to change? Or is it too late for you? I'm asking you, is it too late for you? Are you too old for that now to change? Are you too young to change? Is that the problem? Or maybe you have far too many letters after your name, far too many credentials after your name. Is that the hurdle for you to change? Have you learned far too much to change? Or just, do you know too many people? Are you too well known to change? Is it too soon to change? Is it too late to change? Are you too wealthy or are you too poor to change? After 6 long years of extreme austerity, what did he do? Again, he changed. Now, this is not just any old austerity, folks. Can you imagine? Everyone around you, he realized, the five ascetics who've always been by my side like brothers, now they're going to abandon me. They are going to think that I have given up. They shall abandon me. And for 6 long years I have been trying this. What might they think about my resolve? What might they think about my courage? How might that affect my personality, my integrity? They'll start to question all of these things. They'll think I'm weak-hearted. They'll think I'm too weak to hold on to determination, to a resolve. They'll abandon me. They'll shun me. They'll embarrass me. But this is not what I came here for. I haven't found what I have been looking for. Therefore, I shall change yet again. You know, these are things we must learn from the Bodhisattva's life, folks. You know, far too often, we only look at the Buddha's life and see what can we learn from the Buddha. Why do we forget that the Bodhisattva was the Buddha in making? Isn't that right? The Bodhisattva was the Buddha in the making. It is everything that he did as a Bodhisattva that made him a Buddha. Yes or no? Nothing he did as a Buddha made him a Buddha, because he had already become a Buddha. Sometimes we quite easily forget the causes that lead to a result, and we focus far too much on the result itself. Excuse me. I mean, if you ask me, there are very many lessons to be taken from the Bodhisattva's life. One of the best lessons for me is always be willing to change. Always. At any cost. Because to win, you have to have the ability to change. You have to be willing to change. He knew it. If I change now, then I won't have anyone by my side. I'll be alone again. These men will walk away. And I'll be alone. I'll have to look after myself. I'm weak right now. I'm frail. I can't even hold myself up. Upright. But if I give up my austere practices, then they'll all walk away. But I have come here for something else. I have not come here to be accepted. That is not what I came here looking for. I have not come here looking for respect or endearment or disciples or money, or fame, or wealth, or authority, nothing. What is the point in having anything if the one thing I want I have not yet achieved? Are you like that? Generally speaking, aren't you all people who have everything except the one thing you want? I don't imagine any one of you have attained Nibbana as yet, become an Arahant, right? So, given that, you possess everything but what you want, right? You have your money, you have your cars, you have your family, you have your jobs, you have your houses. You live a splendid lifestyle. Look around you. Look at all the things you have. But what is the point of having all of those things if you don't have the one thing that you really need, that you truly need, that your soul so badly desires? A chance to be free. Otherwise, we just live a life pacifying ourselves every single day. It's like when a child cries for its mother. You stick a pacifier in its mouth. Ah, no, 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 don't cry. Play with this for a while until the child remembers its mother again. And it starts to cry again. And then you give something else to the child. And it starts crying again after a bit. Isn't that what we're doing really with our lives? Take a long and hard look at your lives, folks. What your mind is really looking for is freedom, satisfaction, fulfillment. Have you found that? But like sticking a pacifier in a baby's, between a baby's lips, isn't that what we do in our lives? When the mind cries for freedom, when the mind yearns for fulfillment and satisfaction and happiness, what do we give it? We give it a 10-course buffet. When the mind yearns and cries for freedom, what do we give it? We give it a car. We give it a house. We give it money. We give it clothes. What's the blooming point? None of these things is what the mind's asking for. Don't you get frustrated when you try and talk to someone and they're not listening to you? And you say, hey, can't you hear me? Can't you understand what I'm trying to tell you? That's pretty frustrating, isn't it, when that happens? When you're trying to explain something to someone and you keep on trying and yet they don't understand what you're trying to say. You know how annoying that is? You know how frustrating that is, right? Now, think about your mind for a second. Every single day of your living life, your mind has asked you for something. Give me freedom. Let me free. Let me be. Just let me be. Give me a break. Let me relax. Give me satisfaction. Give me fulfillment. Give me meaning. Cut me some slack. Your entire living life, your mind has asked you for this. And what have you given it? Everything but, right? You've given it money, you've given it cars, you've given it clothes, you've given it women, you've given it men. You're giving it ice cream, you're giving it pizza, you're giving it sausages, you're giving it everything under the sun except for what it asks for. I mean, how heartless is that? You, who gets annoyed, who gets frustrated when someone doesn't listen to you and do as you say, you do the very same thing to your own mind, don't you? When are you going to learn to love yourself? When will you learn to love thyself? The sensual world, we believe, is an answer to the mind's cries, to the mind's weeps and laments. But is it? How much sensual pleasure, once you've given it, will the mind go, "Ah, that's enough. That's me done. Thank you very much." How much of sensual delight, when you feed the mind, will the mind say, "Thank you very much. I'm now done." I mean, take a long and hard look at your mind, folks. Look at what you've done to yourselves. You've got to take a step outside. Take a step outside of your own self and look at yourself now. Would you treat a child like you've treated yourself if you loved it? Would you treat your child like you've treated yourself? Where is your self, your sense of self-empathy? This is not empathy, this is apathy. Couldn't care less. The mind's asking for freedom, and you tie it up in knots. The mind's asking for an opportunity, a moment to breathe and to relax. You lock it down. Stick it into a grueling routine of hard work, labor, and toil, to earn something that it never asked for. Just think about it, all the sensual things that you have thus far acquired into your life, didn't the mind have to work incredibly hard to gain and acquire all those things? Did the mind really ask for any of those things? What good is it to the mind? Can it die in peace? Haven't we neglected our own minds? Haven't we become deaf to the cries of our own minds? Ask yourself. Is there anything that you have given it thus far with which you can say with 100% confidence, "My mind will be happy with that"? Is there anything? Name one thing. Except for the Dhamma, name one thing that you could say. "This thing, Swami Mahansa, I have given myself, this is, I have rewarded myself with this, and my mind will be happy with it. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying to you folks right now. I don't know whether this is too abstract. But I'm talking to you something I feel. Very sincerely about. It strikes me very hard this. I don't know if you feel me. But you need to take a closer look at yourself. Look at what you've done to yourself. Not once have you done anything to heal your mind. Not once have you done anything to give your mind what it asks for. All the time you were just sticking pacifiers in its mouth. Like when a child is thirsty, it's hungry, and it's asking for its mother's breast. You stick a pacifier in its lips. In the same way, when the mind is asking for freedom, for the simple taste of freedom, for a moment of relief, what do you give it? You feed it with the fire of desire, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. Do you know anyone who has been more cruel to your mind than yourself? You got to think about these things. On a serious note, you got to think about these things. This might sound somewhat philosophical, but actually this is the truth. Yes, I'm not talking to you in day-to-day language. But you need to take a step outside of yourself and now look at yourself and then ask yourself some questions. You know, to do this, you need to get your mindset outside of the day-to-day run-of-the-mill. You have to get yourself outside of the 9-to-5. You have to get yourself outside of the dawn-to-dusk mentality. And now look at yourself 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years of doing the same old stuff. And the mind is still not happy. Not an inch have you moved closer to happiness, to freedom. Except for the Dhamma, anything and everything else that you have offered on an altar to the mind has simply been a waste of time. Yes or no? Are you willing to accept that? It is a tough nut to crack. I accept. This is a tough bullet to bite. I accept. It is an ugly truth to open your eyes to and accept. That much I'll accept, yes. Seems to go against everything that you're about. It is almost like saying, in fact, it's not almost, it is literally saying that everything you've done in your 70 years of existence, 60 years of existence, 50, 40 years of existence has amounted to nothing. At least now, are you willing to change? Because you know what? The truth is, folks, right? No one wants money. Really, no one wants money. What people want is happiness. But when we live among people who don't understand the true path to happiness, well, then you can masquerade money as happiness. You can pretend fame as happiness. You can disguise social acceptance as happiness, status as happiness, respect as happiness, literally anything as happiness, because at the end of the day, it's just a pretense. And we don't see this happening to us until we take a step outside of our own selves and take a long and hard look at ourselves. Have we done ourselves justice? You know, think of the mind as being a separate entity, another person. Think of your own mind as a third person. So there's you, there's me, and then your mind. Do you know how much it struggled, how hard it fought, how long it battled to get to where it is today, to earn the ability to change, to earn the right, to earn the opportunity to change, to become something else, to become better, to move on, to actually find freedom? Because until the mind can guide itself as a human or above, there is no hope. There is nothing that the mind can do to free itself. So you see, think of the mind as a separate person and now ask yourself, have you done it justice? It is as if your mind has come to you asking, seeking asylum, right? Is this how you would treat an asylum seeker? Although this might sound like it, I'm not telling you off, you understand that. I'm inviting you to think, to consider. I'm knocking on that hard shell around you and asking you, are you willing to change? Because once you encapsulate yourself in that shell, that impenetrable shell, then you isolate yourself, you cocoon yourself in that. And then you're stuck in your old ways, not willing to change, and therefore forever stuck in the old. Old habits, old ways of thinking, and forever stuck in samsara. Because I know for a fact, folks, right, that these words you will not get to hear again for a very long time, unless you are so extremely fortunate. That is not because I am special. You know that. I would never talk to you in that way. In fact, it is you who is very special. You have fought very hard to get where you are today. But you haven't won yet. That's the thing. Becoming human is only half of the game. The remainder starts once you're human. To have become human is not to have won it all. It's not the be-all and end-all of everything. It is only half the way. From there on, you have to start the battle. But look at what we've done. We've earned ourselves a human life. And then what did we do? How did you spend the last 50 years of your life? Look at all the things youngsters these days are up to. Drugs and alcohol and sex and sensual indulgences. What are they wasting away? Don't you realize that? Stuck in front of a TV set for 8 hours a day, what are they wasting away? Isn't what they're wasting away a long and hard earned opportunity? The ability to change, isn't that what they're sacrificing? In front of the altar that is the TV stand? Why make a sacrificial lamb out of yourself? Are you willing to change? When will they ever decide to change? See, for that to happen, these words must reverberate through those ears, through those minds, in those hearts. They must tug on a heartstring, and these words must echo in their minds. These words must get them up on their feet, spring them into action, put new resolve into their minds. But for that, are they meritorious enough? You have been thus far, but will you continue to? These are all questions I ask myself from time to time. Do you have the merit to continue to listen to these words? for many years to come, until it is done. Remember, I'm not saying I'm special. By these words, I don't mean my words personally, because none of this belongs to me. You know whose words these are. I'm just a radio. To tune into this channel requires a lot. And then to stay tuned requires even more. So now that you have that opportunity, you're right up against it. Are you willing to change? Unless you are bound by duty, obligation, right? Anything and everything else, are you willing to change? Are you willing to forego? Are you willing to scrap and start over? Are you? Truly, are you? Yes is just a word. Anyone can say yes. It's just a three-letter word. But are you truly willing to change? Are you willing to push yourself beyond your comfort zones? Are you willing to pull the plug on your bad habits? On the habits that keep you from achieving the ultimate bliss? Are you willing to make sacrifices? Are you willing to stay up to burn the midnight oil? Are you? Are you? Don't look at me, look at yourself and answer these questions. Are you? Because guess what? You have the ability to be a different person tomorrow to who you are today. So it's not a question of ability, it's a question of willingness. You can, but will you? Will you? I'm asking, will you? If you are, then ask yourself this question. Take a step outside of your own self and now look at yourself and ask you this very important question. Have I done myself justice? Have I done myself justice? What has my mind asked for? What have I given it? Look at all the things you've worked hard to acquire and to build and to gather around you. All of your assets, all of your wealth, all of your property, everything you own. Right? Give me a list of the things that your mind really needs to be happy. You can make a mental note of all the things you own, right? Your net worth. But of all those things that you own, of all the things that you possess, filter out a list of things that your mind really needs. Because at the end of the day, all of this is to help heal the mind, is it not? I mean, you can't shove more than 3 square meals into your body per day. That's all the body needs. The remainder is for your mind, is it not? You didn't bring home a television to feed your body. You brought it to feed your mind. Tell me, did the mind ask for a TV? If it did, should it not be satisfied by now? Should it not be fulfilled by now? So why does it still weep then? Why does it still cry? Why does it still suffer? Are you so heartless as to ignore that? So what good has the TV set done to your mind? It's a big one, yeah, I know. You got a fast car, yeah, I know. It's a sports model, yes, I know. It's even got a 5.1 surround sound system. Yes, I know. How much of that was for the mind? Is the mind content today? Now that you've given it, is the mind happy? Has the mind settled? Is the mind content now? Have you given it what it really asked for? Have you given it what it really wanted? I'm asking you these questions because you may have continued on this beaten track for 40 years of your life. If it hasn't worked, folks, are you willing to change now? Or even as I say these words, are you still on TripAdvisor trying to find your next holiday? As you listen to these words, are you shopping for your next brand new television set? As you listen to these words, are you on Netflix browsing through the latest episodes, the latest TV series, deciding for yourself, which one shall I start watching from tonight? How many hours of TV have you oogled by now? Is that what the mind wanted? Is that what the mind asked for? After, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to do something to please the body, something to please the mind. There is not a third entity to please, right? You must either give yourself something for the body or something for the mind. There is not a third entity. So if it's not for the body, then we have to come to the conclusion that everything else was for the mind. That being the case, the mind ought to be happy, ought to be content, ought to be satisfied by all the things you've done up until this point. Is it? I ask you, is it? Hold your mind by its hand and take it to your favorite bank. Get it sat down with the teller and ask, make an inquiry, how much money do you have in the bank account? Get the balance up on screen and show it to the mind and ask it, are you happy now? Ask. Come on, do it. Log into your online banking. Bring up the balance on screen. Now ask your mind, are you happy now? What's the mind going to say? What's this? I don't want any of this. It's not what I asked for. Then what are you going to say? Take your mind, hold its hand. Hold it by its hand and take it to the fridge. Open the fridge door and show it to the mind and ask it, are you happy now? When you're not getting a response, open the freezer and then show it and ask it, are you happy now at least? How much of that have you already shoved down your throat? Each time trying to please the mind. It was the mind you were trying to please, is it not? As I said, 3 square meals and the body is content. The remainder was all for the mind. So let's ask the mind, are you happy now? That strawberry souffle in the fridge, that mind, body doesn't need that. That chocolate ghetto in the fridge, the body doesn't need that. In fact, you ask the doctor, he'll say, that's poison. Want it? Is it not poison? So you are willing to poison the body to please the mind. Okay, so at least let's ask the mind, are you happy now? What's the mind going to say? You know what the mind will say? The mind will say, you haven't the foggiest idea. You have mistreated me. You have not looked after me. You haven't taken care of me. You've never given me what I wanted. You've never given me what I asked for. I worked so hard to earn this opportunity for us. And all I ask you is for a bit of freedom, is for a bit of happiness, is for some contentment. For bliss. And look at what you're giving me. You're standing in front of the fridge and asking me, is this what I want? You've got to be really brave to take your mind, hold it by its hand up to the fridge and open it and ask it, "Is it what? Are you happy now?" When you are done by the fridge, hold the mind by its hand, take it up to the garage. Show your mind all the cars that are in your garage, your Ferrari and your Maserati, your Lamborghini and your Bentley. And now ask it, "Are you happy now?" The mind is going to ask you, "Are you kidding me? What's this?" Who asked for this anyway? What's all this nonsense? What a load of crap, it'll say. What's this? If it had hair, it would start pulling its hair out, asking you in frustration, "Can't you hear me?" Just like when you're trying to get someone's attention and when you're trying to get yourself heard by someone. Remember that feeling? You're trying to explain yourself to someone and they just don't get you. How annoying is that? Imagine how your mind must feel. You tried how many times to get your point across? Before you got frustrated. How about your mind? How many times did it try to get its point across? It's still trying to do that. And you take it to your garage and show it to your collection of cars and you ask it, "Are you happy now?" Your mind will ask you, "Are you mad now?" I'm saying, folks, take a step outside yourself and look at yourself. You know, you can imagine doing this, can't you? Picture yourself. Get out of yourself. Like, get off the driving seat, step outside. Now look at yourself. Look at the body, look at the mind. Now you seem to have done well in the body department, haven't you? Well fed, well rested. Good, well done. In the mind department, you haven't even started. And the fact of the matter is, trying to satisfy the mind, sometimes you might have even overdone on the body department. All those extra inches around the waist, that was not for the body. Look at yourself in the mirror. Look at how taking the wrong measures to heal, to satisfy your mind, takes its toll on the body as well. That's the next thing you ought to do next time you go around to take a shower. Stand yourself in front of the mirror and ask yourself. Ask the mind, "Are you happy now?" Your mind will probably say, "Are you happy, cow?" Seriously? I'm asking you, are you willing to change? Is it not high time we made some decisions, some choices? Hold your mind by its hand, take it outside. Walk up to the front yard. Turn around and look at that house. It's a big house, isn't it? That's a lovely balcony, new extension, well done. Murals on the side, well done, nice little waterfall on the side. Landscaped all around, fantastic. Sitting in a 100-acre plot of land. Fifty of it, coconut, the other 50. Tea, rubber, whatever. Now ask the mind, are you happy now? What's the mind gonna say? Don't make me laugh. True or false? I mean, as I said, false, right? I don't know if this is making any sense to any of you. I hope it is. I really hope it is, because I want you to think about this. This is high time. Are you willing to change? Time's flying by, right? Your opportunity is passing you by. That opportunity to change, because once you have consumed this opportunity, then who knows when you're ever going to get another chance. After all, that is what being human is all about, the opportunity to change. If you want me to define humanness, the opportunity to change. What is being born in the blissful plane all about? It is the opportunity to change. The possibility to change. But unfortunately, opportunity and possibility are not synonymous with willingness. Most of the time you'll just have one and not the other. And what a pity that is. You have worked hard to build a sensual world around you. And you continue to build that. You continue to augment that with everything you can get your hands on. You continue to work long and hard hours, building it up piece by piece, beautifying it, glorifying it, shining it, polishing it. Ask your mind, are you happy now? Take it in front of the drawing table or your dressing table in the bedroom. and show it your collection of jewelry, the finest there is. The diamonds and the pearls, and the emeralds and the rubies, the gold and silver. Now ask the mind, are you happy now? Reach out, put your arms out, put your hand out and hold that diamond necklace in your hand. Yes, that one with the Swarovski crystals, that's the one. Pick it up. Put your hand on your earlobes and feel those golden earrings and ask your mind, are you happy now? Did the body ask for it? Open the drawers. Get out that makeup kit. And ask the mind, are you happy now? Are you happy at least now? What's the mind going to say? How do we know the mind is not happy with any of these things? The answer is right in front of you. The reason that it's there right in front of you, that very thing you're asking the mind about, is evidence that that was not what your mind wanted. Because if that was what your mind wanted, why would it want something else? Why would it want anything else? But all around you are so many things that you've had to acquire excuse me, over the years, throughout your life, none of which made your mind happy. So what a silly question to ask. Are you happy now? But then you come across this conundrum. If it wasn't for the body, then it has to be for the mind. But the mind doesn't seem to be happy with it. Well, and the body never wanted it. So then you remains the question, what was all that for? No? As I said, three square meals, something to cover itself up, to protect itself from insects, the elements, a roof above the head, some medicines when it's ill, that's all the body wants. Everything else, you seem to have gone off and gotten for the mind. Let's ask the mind then, are you happy now? I got all this for you, are you happy now? And what's the mind going to say? Are you kidding me? It's going to ask, when did you become a joker? Yeah, go on, pick up that perfume bottle. Spray it on your wrist and hold it up to your nose. Does the nose want this? Not at all. So let's ask the mind, are you happy now? The mind's gonna say, are you insane now? I never asked for this. I never wanted this. I just wanted freedom. I want to be free. I want bliss. I want happiness. I want contentment. I just want you to let me be, for heaven's sake. Just let me be. Stop vexing me. Stop torturing me. Stop stealing my freedom. Stop burning me with desire. Let me be free, please. That's what the mind's going to say. What good is that bottle of perfume to the mind? Never asked for it, never wanted it. Hasn't got anything to do with it. If the mind wanted perfume, then the mind would have a nose, wouldn't it? The body has a nose, not the mind. Hold it by its hand, take it over to the living room, get out those photo albums and ask it, did you enjoy that trip? How about this one? You know, when we went to visit the safaris, when we went on that desert safari, when we went to the zoo, when we went to see the Eiffel Tower, when we went on the London Eye, did you enjoy that? When we went on that boat ride, see these pictures, right? The boat ride. The mind's gonna say what? Yeah, right, boat ride. Not what I wanted, not what I asked for. I don't want this. I don't need this. I want freedom. I want freedom. I want to be free. I want to be free of vexation. I want to chill for once. I want to relax. I want to breathe easy. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. None of this is what I want. You seem to be giving me all of these things. I don't want any of these things. I just want bliss. Isn't there anything that can give me bliss? Anything? Now, folks, I want you to think about this, really. You know, when you take a step outside of yourself and just look at yourself, you will start to feel this way and you will begin to wonder, what have I done to myself all this time? It will seem like you wouldn't treat your worst enemy this way. Let alone a child. But look at what you've done. None of this is what the mind wanted. None of this is what the mind asked for. None of this can satisfy the mind. None of this is bliss to the mind. Are you willing to change? For your mind's sake, are you willing to change? For true happiness, are you willing to change? Are you willing to break out of your old ways, old habits? Are you willing to fight those childish infatuations and take life seriously? Because then and only then does the Dhamma have any chance with you. Because what the mind really wants is a dose of Dhamma. A dose of Dhamma, that's all the mind wants. The one thing that can bring it peace. The one thing that can free itself. Because it's caught up in ignorance and attachment. So the only thing that that's going to help it break free from ignorance and attachment is the Dhamma. Not the sights that you continue to feed it. Not the sounds or the taste or the smell or the touch. None of these things has any effect whatsoever on freeing the mind from the clutches of ignorance and attachment. That only the Dhamma can do. So are you willing to dedicate your life to the Dhamma? Are you willing to make a change? Are you willing to put out those fires of desire? The fires of aversion and the fire of delusion. Are you willing to allow, to let the water of Dhamma douse you? Are you willing to change? Because whatever you do, it has to be purposeful, right? It has to be either to satisfy the body or it has to be to satisfy the mind. Already you have done enough to satisfy the body. Over 80% of everything that is done during the course of a day, when you come to think of it, is really not to satisfy the body, but rather to satisfy the mind. But unfortunately, and this is the shame of it, none of that is what the mind wants. So really, to really do justice to yourself, you know what the ideal life should be like? Can I suggest to you? I'm not asking you to change in this way, certainly not in such a drastic way. But ideally, except for the time that you put aside, to catering to the body's needs, that is, a meal when you're hungry, getting hold of some clothes, even if they're rags, to cover yourself up, to keep yourself safe, finding a shelter to keep yourself safe from the elements, and if ever you're ill, sourcing some medicines to heal yourself, the body. Except for the time you set aside for these things, what must the remainder of your time be set aside for? Now you think and answer. What do you think? Look at all the things you have around you in your home and ask you, is that what you should have spent your time on? Ask yourself the question. Now that we've taken the mind by its hand and walked it around the house and asked the question, are you happy now? And we know the responses we got back, right? Now then tell me, if you've fed yourself, if you've clothed yourself, if you've sheltered yourself, and if you've treated yourself, once you've done these four things, what must the remainder of your time be spent on? Look around the house and tell me on that, if possible. Point your finger at any one thing in your house and say, that is what I should have spent the remainder of my time on. Where is that one thing? Is it in the living room or is it in the bedroom? Is it in the garden? Or is it in the kitchen? Is it in the washroom? Or is it in the playroom? Maybe the office room? Where do you want to take me and show me and tell me, Swami Mahansa, besides the effort that I have made to supply myself with the four requisites, this is where I should have spent my time on, and look, that's what I did, and here's what I have gained out of it. Show me that one thing. Gone. I'm waiting. Gone. Where is it? Where is that one thing you can really point your finger out at, hand on heart, tell yourself convincingly, okay? This is not tricking or fooling yourself. There's no need for self-deception here. Right? With conviction, show me one thing that you have in your home which you can point at and tell me, Swami Mahansa, this is time well spent. Once the four requisites have been ticked off, give me one example of time well spent. What a fantastic job you've done with managing your time. It only took you the best part of 70 years to build that wall around you, didn't it? Is it not time for a change? Do we not realize that there is a need for a new tactic? Is it not high time for a new strategy? Is it not time to change the set of the sails? Haven't we lost our bearings? Is it not time to change direction? Look at all the things you've done based on the things that people around you told you were the right things to do, and now you're asking your mind, are you happy? And it's speechless. Not once could it answer positively to any of those questions. Not once could it say, oh my God, thank you so much for doing that for me. Not once. Not once could the mind say, that you did there, thank you so much. So what do you think about the sensual world that you've built around yourself now then? I'll give you the first part of the word, you fill in the remainder, okay? Use. You can either go useful or useless. I don't know, I can't decide for you. So I'll give you the first part, you give me the second. Use. Meaning. Fruit. Essence. Today the meaning of the word essenceless must really ring in your mind. If you followed the sermon, if you listened closely, if you paid attention, what essenceless means must start to make sense to you. Can you honestly ask your mind, are you happy now? Is there much meaning to that question? So if you begin to realize this now, then what's the next step? What's that? Regretting. Okay, regret then. Now let's go and ask the mind, are you happy now? What do you think the mind's going to say? Okay, let's all regret. Okay, let's regret that we have all the things that we have done throughout our life up until this point has so badly lacked meaning and essence. Right? So let's regret about that all now, and let's now go and ask the mind again, are you happy now? What do you think the mind's going to say? I think what the mind will say is, let me make one final plea to you, please. It will say, you have wasted this many years of opportunity. Okay, I'll bite the bullet and let's move on. But there's time left. Can you please change now? There's still life left in me. There's still opportunity left in me. There's still a new beginning, a new future left in me. Can you please change now? That's what the mind is going to ask you. Give me what I want, please. Because the only thing, folks, that can heal the mind is what? What is the only thing that can heal the mind? None other than the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the only thing that can heal the mind. Just like food is the only thing that can heal hunger, water the only thing that can heal thirst. Dhamma is the only thing that can heal the mind. Is it not time we actually start giving the mind what it really needs? I mean, now, you know, if you are willing to consider what I have suggested to you, now you work out the math. You work out your time schedules, you work out your timetables and tell me, are you doing justice by yourself? Let's say you set aside a couple of hours a week to practice the path, to listen to a sermon. Does that seem about right? Do you think that serves justice? I think there's some 168 odd hours in a week. So almost 170 hours in the week, two of which you put aside to healing the mind. You know, if the mind were your child, the authorities would take it away from you. Now, you know, in some countries they do that, right? When the parents don't really look after their children, where the child is not getting what it deserves, protection, care, affection, right? Then the authorities, they come and take away the child. So if there were an organization that was called the Mind Protection Agency, and if you're telling me that you put aside 2 hours of the 170 odd hours of the week to healing the mind, the Mind Protection Agency will come and take your mind away and fine you. I mean, I don't know whether it's 2 hours or 20 hours. I'm just saying, these are just arbitrary numbers I'm pulling out of thin air. But I understand that you have a busy life. That I understand. Yes, I do. And I can empathize with you. But is that all you need? My empathy. So now you have my empathy, now that's it. Job done. Problem solved. Now ask the mind, are you happy now? And what's the mind going to say? Well, if Swami Mohan says, empathizing with us, then yeah, problem solved, no problem. Is that what the mind's going to say? Yeah, yes, you can put forward your case. Swami Mohan, I have a house to clean, I have dishes to wash, I have food to cook, I have children to look after, I have the clothes to wash, I have to go to work, I have to do my studies, I have to do my masters, I have to take out the bin, I have to do the school run, I have to pay the bills, I have to wash the car, I have to wash the dog, I have to wash the husband. You can say all these things. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on. So let's ask the mind. Swami Mohan has said he understands. No, yes, seriously, I asked Swami Mohan. You can say that to the mind. Right? I asked Swami Mohan and he said, well, you know, you've got all these duties and responsibilities and obligations. Of course, you can't find time to practice the path. No wonder. Right? What's the mind going to say now? To heck with Swami Mohan, say, this is not what I want. I didn't ask for a husband. I didn't ask for a puppy. I didn't ask for children. I didn't ask for dishes. I didn't ask for rice. I didn't ask for house. I didn't ask for telephone bills. I didn't ask for electricity bills. I didn't ask for any of this rubbish. I want peace. I want bliss. I'm being burnt alive by 3 fires of desire, aversion and delusion, and you're giving me husband? You're giving me a wife? What am I to do with a wife? I'm a mind. I burn from desire. I burn from aversion. I burn from delusion. I'm a mind. I'm looking to extinguish this fire of desire, aversion and delusion. And the only thing that can do that is the Dhamma. That's what the mind is going to say. Swamin once said, okay, he's not going to cut it. The mind doesn't care what Swamin once says. I probably never say these things out loud to you in your face, so I'm glad we are doing this sermon like this. Because I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. I honestly don't. I don't want to make you feel embarrassed. I don't want to unsettle you. So in some ways I'm glad that this sermon is done in this way, where I don't get to see you and you don't get to see me, particularly this one. This particular sermon. But unfortunately, this is the truth, folks, and I have to tell you the truth. It's ugly, but it's the truth. It stinks, but it's the truth. It's not every day I tell you about this, but from time to time I need to remind you, bring you back to reality. I want you to ask yourself, are you doing really anything that is purposeful? I've got no qualms with you working hard if you need to put 3 square meals into your tummy and to sate your hunger. If you need to work 9 to 5 or and then 5 to 9 again to dress yourself up and to put a shelter over your head and to heal, to treat yourself when you're ill, fair enough. You can work 24/7 if that is what's needed. Right? But what's the truth? Look around you and ask yourself that question. Hand on heart, ask yourself some really candid questions. What was this all about? What was this all for? What did I go out and buy this for? Why did I go out and get this? Why did I work hard for this? Why did I do the long hours for this? What was it all in the end for? Was it worth it? Was it worthwhile? Who was it for? Was it for the body or was it for the mind? The body is going to go, not for me. I'm all right. I'm not hungry. I'm clothed. I'm sheltered. I'm not ill, I'm alright. So, not for me, don't ask me, pass. And you ask the mind's gonna go, what's all this? Are you kidding me? This is for me? No way. I don't need any of this. I need peace, I need bliss, I need happiness. I need contentment. For that, I need Dhamma. Where is the Dhamma? You know, if this makes sense to you folks, pick up your timetable and look at it. Now ask yourself, have you got it right? Or have you messed up? If at this point you're scratching your head wondering, oh yeah, timetable, I have to do that, then you don't even have to ask that question. Have I got it right or have I got it messed up? The answer is obvious. You might think I'm stern. You can dress it up in your own words, however you like. I just know I care. And you just have to believe me. I care enough to bring you back to reality. I care enough to get you, hold you by your hand, sit you down, buckle you up to the belt of reality, with the belt of reality, and ask you some tough questions about your own life. Otherwise, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it otherwise? I can sugarcoat it all. I can say, I can give you Rockabye Baby on the treetop. Oh yeah. For what? And insult your merit? Why would I do that? You didn't go through all that hard work to earn all those merits? To come here, for me to come here and give you a nursery rhyme? No, as a matter of fact, you did those merits to have me come and give you the metaphorical kick up the backside. So open your eyes, come to reality, and ask yourself the question, are you doing yourself justice? Ask your mind the question, are you happy now? You keep on building that sensual world around you for no gain whatsoever, because that is not what the mind wants. More and more desire is only adding fuel to the fire. And the more sensual delights you surround yourself with, the more things that you have to guard, the more things that you have to protect. Why? Because there is nothing in this world. If you want, there's not another man, woman or child that doesn't want. Anything that you want, someone else also wants. If it's not someone else, it's at least the wind will take it away from you. The sun will take it away from you. The rains will take it away from you. Or the ground will swallow it up. Earth, fire, wind and water will take it away from you if no one else does before that. So forever as long as you live in desire, you must also live in aversion. There is no escape from that. They are just the two sides of the same coin. You will never be free from one and not the other. And you will never be enslaved from just one and not the other either. To not realize this is to live in delusion. So then, of course, for as long as you have desire and aversion burning inside you, there's no doubt that the fuel of delusion is also burning inside of you. And for as long as these three fires are alight, the mind has no freedom, no happiness, no bliss. Are you willing to change? Are you going to turn around? Are you willing to drop it all and start again? Are you seriously? Take these words with as much intensity as you can bear. I know most of you will not be able to take these words literally, because when I say literally, are you willing to change and start again, you know exactly what I mean. You're in the wrong place for that. It's not there you need to be. It's here you need to be. If that's too heavy, if that makes you cringe, then take it as much as you can bear it. Just depends on how much you're willing to change. And partly, of course, how much your circumstances allow you to change. Ah, thank you, Swami Nuhansa. Swami Nuhansa said, it's okay. Now we can relax. Ha. Right? Because Swami Nuhansa said, if you have duties and responsibilities and obligations, then of course you can't. Then it's okay. Tell that to the mind. Whose mind? Your mind. Tell it to your mind. Are you willing to change? When are you going to realize that all this, everything you've done, this world that you built around you, all the material things that you've worked so hard to acquire and build, gather up, hoard, that all amounts to nothing? Prove me I'm wrong if you can. And I'll change. Be kind to yourself. This is what I'm asking you to do. Be kind to yourself. Remember, may I and all beings in all worlds. Don't forget who you started with. Don't think I'm being harsh. Don't think I'm being stern. Or I'm admonishing you. Or just that I've had a bad day today. and I'm just venting my anger on you. No, in fact, I've had a very good day today. That's why you are receiving it with full force. That's why you're getting the brunt of it. So are you willing to change? Are you willing to go back to that timetable and ask yourself, am I doing myself justice? Are you putting enough time towards the Dhamma? Are you listening to what the mind has to tell you? Can you learn to be more kind towards your mind? Can you be more responsive and more responsible? To your mind? Are you doing enough? The clock's ticking. And with every tick and with every tock, that's taken away 1 second from a pool of opportunity, an opportunity to change, an opportunity to completely change course. Tomorrow can be entirely different to today. All that is required is your will, your resolve, your determination, your want to do it. Everything else will fall in place. You have us to guide you. You have us to encourage you and push you. What else do you need? What are you lacking? Think about a man in some faraway country where, for example, let's say Buddhism is forbidden. Some people are so meritorious enough to be born in places like that. Where Buddhism is forbidden. You can't talk Buddhism, you can't practice Buddhism, you can't, well, any other religion. There are places like that. It must be people's merits that take them there. Imagine that man there, wherever that is, some part of this world. What has he got that you haven't? What haven't you got that he has? It may be that he is very rich. Perhaps in that part of the world people are in fact very rich. Who knows? So they have a fridge that's 10 times as big as yours. They have a garage that's 10 times as big as yours. They have a dressing table that's 10 times as big as yours. A house that is 10 times as big as yours. They don't call it a house anymore, they call it a palace. they have 10 times as many wives as you have. Now, let that man take his mind by his hand and ask the question, are you happy now? So tell me again, what is it that you don't have? You're lacking in what you said? You don't have what was it that you said? A sensual world is an essenceless world. A sensual world is a meaningless world. A sensual world is a fruitless world. A sensual world is a useless world. Because it does not satisfy neither body nor mind. The body does not need a sensual world. The body needs food, shelter, clothes and medicines. Not a sensual world. And the mind has absolutely no use for it, because that is not what the mind needs. The mind is alight with the fires of desire, aversion and delusion. Feeding an ailing mind with a sensual world is much the same as scratching yourself away, scratching that rash all over your body. You feel the itch, don't you? So you scratch away. The bigger your sensual world, the more you dig deeper into the wound as you scratch at it. You can scratch it until the skin peels off. You can scratch it and it becomes sore. Then you start to bleed. But it ain't gonna take the itch away. Oh no. For that, you need the right medicine. The mind has a mental itch. No amount of sensuality is going to heal that. There's only one thing that can do it. Only one, one and only. And that is the Dhamma. Ask yourself, how much of your life have you set aside? Have you put towards practicing the path towards the Dhamma, embracing the Dhamma, enriching your life with the Dhamma, putting out the fires that burn inside with the Dhamma, and how much of your life you have put aside towards all the other things that you do. Are you doing yourself justice? Only you will know the answer. I don't need your answer, for as long as you are happy with the answer, that's fine. If you think you are doing enough, well done. If you think you are not doing enough, are you willing to change? Are you waiting for the right time? There is no such thing as right time. What there is the time is right. So think about this and take action. What action you know, because you know, and throughout all sermons, almost all of our sermons, you know, we pack them with practical advice. Practical things that you can do to move your life forward one step at a time, to shape it right, to set the sail right, starting with your attitudes, your perspective to life. What more? What more do you need? It's all there. It's all there. Now all that is needed is for you to ask yourself a very important question. Am I doing enough? Am I doing it right? Am I doing myself justice? Are you happy now? Decide. Take action. Sensuality is a meaningless activity. The pursuit of sensual goals, sensual delights, sensual pleasures is an entirely meaningless, fruitless, essenceless, useless thing to do. Because the mind never asked for it. The mind doesn't want it. The mind has no use for it. It is ailing through desire, aversion and delusion. And the only remedy to that is Dhamma. How do we know? We know this because if sensual pleasures were the answer to the ailing mind, then by now your mind should have been healed many times over. How much have you given so far, and how little have you got back? Why? Give the wrong thing, you get the wrong thing back. Give the right thing, you get the right thing back. So think about this. Are you doing enough? Are you doing it right? Is it the right time? Are we going to wait any longer? I mean, when is that auspicious year for you to start practicing the path? 2000 what? If there's an answer to that question, then the answer should be something like 2008 will never come. So don't wait for the right time. The time is right now. Reflect on these words. Reflect on the meaninglessness of sensuality. Get out of yourself for a moment, as I asked you to do, and look around. Turn around and look at yourself. Then look around and look at the world that you built for yourself and ask your mind the question, are you happy now? See what answer you get back. Armed with the answer to that question, decide for yourself, am I doing enough? Do I need to do more? Is this the right pace? Do I need to up my game? Maybe today is about that realignment. Maybe today is about that fine-tuning. Maybe today is that call back to reality. Maybe today is the day you decide to change. Let's change. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Kirit, listening to the Dhamma and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. With immense gratitude, let us transfer this merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have all acquired to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to Guru Swami Mahansa and all other monks residents at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. And may, to the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. And may, to the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May, through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our parents, our spouses, siblings, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, our friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form possible to them. And may, by the power of these merits, they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Shasane. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may, to the power of these merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us and supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation and continue to do so. And may all who have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one. Reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them, and may, through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in woeful planes, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. and may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that may to the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may to the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an Arahat Mahanse or an Arahat Mehinin Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. On that note, we will conclude today's sermon. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.